Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Ashington is a pit village in Northumberland, about 20 miles to the north of Newcastle. It was once said to be the biggest pit village in the world, and it certainly is one of the oldest and most famous mining towns in the northeast. Some of the pits in the surrounding countryside have closed, but on the other hand, new coastal mines stretching 6 miles in the North Sea are being worked at Lynmouth and elsewhere. And there are the old established colliers at Ellington, Pegswood, North Seaton and Ashington itself. Ashington resembles an Irish country town with the usual complement of shops and public buildings. There are, however, only 3 pubs. The local landowner and co-owner, the Duke of Portland, a teetotaler, stipulated that no public houses should be built on his land. The mining community got around this, however, by building 21 workingmen's clubs. The Ashington Colliery is just off the main street, tucked behind rows and rows of brown brick miners' cottages. The battle between capital and labour has been going on here as elsewhere in Northumberland for over 100 years. And the miners' story is one of explosions, disasters, inundations, strikes, lockouts and victimisation. The appalling working conditions and the fight to improve these bred a race of hard men with a sense of comradeship.
It's in the evening after dark when a blackleg miner creeps to work with his moleskin pants and dirty short. There goes the blackleg miner. He takes his picks and down he goes to hew the coal that lies below. But there's not a woman in this town who will look at the blackleg miner. So join the union while you may, don't wait till your dying day, cause that may not be far away, thou dirty blackleg miner.
It makes me very conscious of being part of a special race, a special breed, because the Northumbrian pitmen, indeed the County Durham pitmen as well, had a real rough time. My grandfather talks about when his father used to carry him over the fields to the pit on his back as a small boy of 13. My own father went down the mine at 14. He didn't want to go down the pit. He was compelled to. Had he not, the rest of the family would have been evicted from the coal company house. So his whole life was channeled for him. And once he got into the pit, it's a grueling, horrible existence. Everybody in my family, every male in my family, has been badly injured in the pit. They're a hardy, hardy race. Tough men. I'm very proud to come from that strain.
Oh, the collier lad, he's a canny lad, and he's always of good cheer. And he knows how to walk, and he knows how to soak, and he knows how to suck good beer. Why, it's down the shaft on a Monday morn, and the cable is the best. In the busty seam with Thompson's team, in a flat called the 14th West. Now the fierce is 105 yards long, when measured from nuke to nuke. And when crawling all the scufflings, lads, keep them down or you're going to get stuck.
The number of disasters and the number of lives which have been lost in the coal mines in the northeast of England can never be assessed. Can never be assessed. The nearest we can get to it, there's been a bit of work done on this one in research. At one time, there must have been 1,000 people a year dying in the coal mines. This was through inundation, through explosion, through individual men going, or perhaps groups of 25 and 26. But you go to any area, and each area will tell its tales of death in the mass. You can go to southeast Northumberland, to a place called Harton, 204 people died, and another 8 died trying to rescue the other ones. You can go to a place in County Durham called Seaham, 169 died there. In my own village where I come from, it's in northwest Durham, a very old and traditional mining area, no pits left now, they've shut them down. But in my time in that village, there has been an explosion which cost the lives of 19. There's been another explosion which cost the lives of only 3. Before I was born, but very much sunk into the village conscience, there was 168 died. Before that, in the same quarry, there was 19 died, and that's only in one small, very small mining village. Any mining area in Northumberland and Durham you can go to, you've got stories of explosion, of inundation, of roof fall. Many, many people have died, but we'll never know how many, because until the 1840s, they didn't even bother to hold an inquest on a miner who was killed. It was an act of God. A miner was killed below ground. But we've got records going back to the 14th century of people who died below ground in various mining disasters. Well, that kind of thing very obviously colours the community sort of
psychology. Oh, let's not think of tomorrow, lest we disappointed be. Our joys may turn to sorrow, as we all may daily say. Today we're strong and healthy, but tomorrow comes a change. As we may see from the explosion that's occurred at Trimden Grange. Men and boys set out that morning for to earn their daily bread, not thinking that by evening they'd be numbered with the dead. Let's think of Mrs. Burnett, once had sons but now has none. By the Trimden Grange explosion, Joseph, George and James have gone.
Well, I was 17 in January that year, and it was into the June, and I was pony putting, and I had a bit of a silly pony, wailed a bit, and it just bolted on us, and it... They took some timber out. Stones come down and I was under them. When I got out, the hand was bashed up. Scraped a bit, you know, down the back and skinned. But, just one of them things, you understand it.
So you didn't get much compensation out of that anyway?
No, as I said, just 50 bob a fortnight. And, as I say, you were... You weren't paid for loss of blame, you were paid for loss of earnings, and I hadn't lost many earnings, so I just got a few shilling. It was really nought.
But did that affect your work subsequently? I mean, there were certain types of work you couldn't do after that.
Well, I managed to do all types of work, like, but it was with difficulty at times, such as gripping levers, where you wanted two hands, well... As I say, I more or less just had the one finger and thumb for it and one hand to grip with, and a decent hand the other one, thank God. And now and again it used to get bashed on the knuckle there where the finger was amputated, and it used to set you off a bit. You used to bash on the nerves you have, you were walking and you happened to bash it. It used to set you crazy a bit, like.
And you still feel pain?
Oh, yeah, especially if it's cold, it's still, you know, getting straight of it. I've got to keep it warm.
And then you developed some sort of skin disease as well.
On that hand, that was only about 14, 15 years ago. We're walking, it was terrible conditions. We were using the hydraulic supports at the time, and mixture of that oil and the sludge we're walking amongst that, I think it was that set this hand away. And no, if I can't grip anything tight for any length of time, it cracks and starts bleeding. I had a hell of a fight. I got compensation for that leg, but I had a hell of a fight for it in front of doctors and the best skin specialist I could find for to prove my case, and I finally made it. And then I didn't come up a great lot. I was quoted as 5% disability. I think it amounted to what they call life for over 7 years. I think I got about £150, I think. That was the life of it. Plus, I get this hardship, miners' industrial hardship allowance every week, which has went up lately to £11.44. Well, that eases it a little bit, like. Makes a good thing at the end of the year when you reckon up. But I got more for that hand than what I got for the one that I partly lost altogether.
Last Saturday night by the banks of the Dee, I met an old man in distress, I could see. I sat down beside him, and to me he did say, "Oh, I've lost me employment, for me hair it's torn grey. I am an old miner, age 56. If I could get lots, oh, I'd ruffle me picks. I'd ruffle them, or I'd sell them, or I'd give them away. For I've lost me employment, for me hair it's torn grey."
I've mentioned an explosion at Hartley Colliery. What happened there was that 204 men died simply because the one access they had, egress and access, was at a single shaft, and it wasn't an explosion, it wasn't an inundation or nothing, it was simply that the machine broke, a machine which hangs over the shaft. There's a big 10 ton arm of this machine broke, it tumbled down the shaft and carried away all the timbering, and they finished it with about 45 yards of rubble at the bottom, but that rubble blocked their way out of the pit, and what happened to them is that they suffocated to death. 204 of them went away, but nobody ever spared effort. I mean, that pit was worked 24 hours a day. I suppose it's a human thing. There's nothing so remarkable about it. This is what people do and communities do in that kind of situation. But in the mining community, I think perhaps we see more of it. Therefore, we tend to think that it's unique to us. I don't know whether it's so or not.
The Huntly men are noble, and you'll hear a tale of woe. I'll tell of the doom of the Huntly men in the year of 62. It was on a Thursday morning in the first month of the year, when there befell a tragedy, as sadly ye shall hear. Now to and fro the putters run, as where the tubs they go, and clang a wheel and hoof on steel, ring in the mine below. The din and strife of human life is hard and wild and bored, when all at once a shock is felt, which fills each heart with dread. And then a silent killer moved him, known among the men. Each tried to rise, but shut his eyes and fell to sleep again. Some sing their spirits for to cheer, some doon in prayer do fall. But gas was filling up the space, and soon will kill them all.
Well, Burning Button is when you went into these places where there was no conveyors, and you went in what they called boards and wells. And you used to get in and seek the men's tubes with the pulleys, shove the empty tube in, fill up and keep going for the rest of your shift, and you were paid on the scores that you produced. The harder you went, the more money you got, which you had to work hard to get, because at that particular time it was 1 and 3 a score. That's what I had when I started as a lad, 1 and 3 a score.
I'm just a smelly laddie, hardly old enough to hew, but I've held me on at putting with the best I have on you. Give us plenty bait and bottle, plenty beef and baccy chows, and I'll bet me bunch of tokens that from Gannon don't allows. I'm running for the udden, running for the udden, running for the udden from Gannon don't allows. There's a half a dozen gannons in the flat that damn it now, and if I had me on a choosing, I would hear when one or two. But somehow or other, how it comes, I divinair, as sure as rub me careful, it's the worst and on the sir. I'm running for the udden, running for the udden, running for the udden from Gannon down to Lowell.
The Londonderries. The Londonderries held huge estates in Ireland. They also held huge estates in the north of England, and indeed elsewhere. And when we had a great strike here, the first of the great miners' strikes, in fact, was in the northeast in 1831, 1832. Lord Londonderry held huge tracts of mining leases, and he held mines and employed miners. And what happened there made the name of Londonderry absolutely reviled, and even today the family, and of course it still exists, there's a Londonderry still living now, still slightly reviled among the historically conscious miner. What happened was, he said, okay, if you go on strike, he said, I will bring over my Irish tenantry to break your strike. I will have you evicted from your homes, and so on and so forth. And he said that any one of the shopkeepers in his town of Seaham Harbour who served the poor, deluded children of miners on credit would be evicted from their premises and so forth. Now, that was a Londonderry. And that, you would admit, seems to smack something of Irish history too, doesn't it? I mean, he used the weapon of the Irish tenantry to break a strike here. It would have been absolutely the same if the Irish tenantry had been causing him problems. He would have been telling them, I shall bring over some of my English peasantry to take your job from you. It seems to have a certain smack about it of history.
In Ward, Durham County, I am sorry for to say that hunger and starvation is increasing every day. For the want of food and coals, we know not what to do. But with your kind assistance, we will stand the struggle through. I needn't state the reason why we have been brought so low. The masters have behaved unkind, which everyone will know. Because we won't lie down and let them treat us as the like. To punish us, they've stopped the pits and caused the present strike. May every Durham colliery owner that is in the fault receive 9 lashes with a rod and then be rubbed with salt. May his back be thick with boils so that he may never sit and never bust until the wheels gone round at every pit.
Time trails his neats and days across the spheres into the last oblivion, yet the hope of freedom's triumph in each hour appears.
nor is he faced, where forlorn men go up for grace. Time is freedom's slave, the hoary'll bend his night and day endeavours to the end. And what's time doing for us, the human worlds that crowd below the earth's deep groaning crust, the hulk from nature's treasure house, the curls that for our country's needs are still a must, to make the turbines hum, the poor lead on all the tools that implement our trade. Why, we've won justice through our unity, our common bond high poor no defies. We'll put an end to profit lust or spree that gripped the throat of war-tormented cries, when war's sad plight was never understood and dividends were won with pitman's blood.
In later years, what happened? Well, the 1914-18 war seems to have been the great watershed. I know this also applies elsewhere in rural England as well, but I think more so here, and there's proof of that, because in 1918... people, miners who'd gone away to that war, fought in the local county regiments here. There was the Durham Light Infantry, and there was the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers. They went away and they came back and they really started to believe. They went there with ideals, and they realised those ideals had been abused. They came back, and they realised that nothing had altered. Things hadn't changed. And in 1919, for the first time in British political history, there came a point where the working class community had an opportunity of voting for his own kind of person. What happened in County Durham, in fact, was that dramatically, in one year, the people who'd ruled the county council were the coal owners, the landowners. They were suddenly kicked out, and the following council meeting consisted of little fellas with bow-legged, pallid faces in flat caps and silk scarves who didn't even know how to conduct a meeting. They had a leader of immense capability called Peter Lee, and he in fact brought them, reared them, schooled them and taught them. He became chairman of the council that year, of course, and from there on I think it's Durham County has remained a Labour stronghold. One constituency, Chesterley Street for instance, has never ever, despite all political upset, despite all reverses for the Labour Party, it's never ever reversed its political feeling. It's voted Labour forever. I believe it's the only one in Britain. And of course, beyond that again, going back to the 1870s, when there was an extension of the franchise, it gave the vote to a broader spectrum of the working community. Well, this was hailed as a great democratic victory by the working class community of that time, certainly in the northeast. And that constituency was in Morpeth. It was a miner called Thomas Burt, and he stood for Parliament, of course, with the vote being extended to include the miners, and the Morpeth area at that time was largely a mining community. Of course, he got in. He was the first ever working class. It's an outmoded phrase now, I know, but then it really wasn't. First ever working class member of Parliament in British political history. Thomas Burt, when he went there, there was a great deal of fun made of him because of his dialect, for a start. People in the House of Commons had never heard a dialect such as Thomas Burt's, a Geordie dialect. He couldn't be otherwise, he had to be a Geordie, you know. But he's a very, very intelligent man. And politically, of course, he had to be liberal because the Labour Party hadn't been invented then.
If you're inclined to hear a song, I'll sing a verse or two. And when I's done, you're gunning to say that every word is true. Now the miners of South Meadows Lean, they never will forget for Isaac and his tyranny and how they had been treated. For in the midst of danger, these hardy sons did toil, fought on their daily bread so far beneath the soil, to make an honest a livelihood each miner did contrive. But ye shall hear how they were solved in 1895. Oh, the miners of St. Meadows Lean, they're gunning to make some stew, they're gunning to boil fat Buster Candy's dirty candy crew. The mare's fresh round outward soup as long as they're alive, in memory of the dirty tricks in 1895.
The pit manager is always a little interesting character. He is a fairly powerful man from time to time. What sort of relationship exists between the pit manager, for the most part, and the workers?
We've had some managers you can speak to. We've had some, like, when you call them swine, I would call them. They don't know how to speak to men, they don't know how to treat men. And I think we've got a one at the present time. He's not a pleasant natured fella. You get more grunts than what you get words out of him. And I don't think there's a great good relationship between the pitman and him. Not too strong. People just tend to ignore him. He's not there.
But some of them are characters in their own right.
Oh, aye. Yes. There's some funny men. Some funny men. But, I know they've got a job of work to do, but saying good morning to anybody is... That's not costing the world of money or being sociable, but as I say, that man, I just let him, if he speaks, I speak back. If he doesn't, well, he just walks by and I ignore him. It's the best way to get on with him.
A dialogue, I'll tell you, as true as me life, between the coal owner and a poor pitman's wife. As she was a-walking along the highway, why she met the coal owner, and as she did say,
"Derry down, 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 derry down."
"Good morning, Lord Fire Damp," this woman, she says, "I'll do ye nae harm, sir, so divn't be afraid. If ye'd been where I've been the most of me life, ye wadn't torn pale at the poor pitman's wife.
Derry down, 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 derry down."
The term Geordie is a very loose term. It embraces your Northumbrians, Tynesiders, people from the mining communities of County Durham, Northwest Durham, and to a certain extent people from Teesside. That's how the foreigner or the outsider would think of a Geordie. Once you came here, you would see that there's quite sharp divisions, in fact. The Teesider has his special culture and his own accent. Your Tynesider has his own way of life and his own accent. And your Geordies, or your Northumbrians, as far as I'm concerned, people from Northumberland, the part, say, from about 10 or 12, 13 miles north of the Tyneside conurbation, which sprawls the length of the River Tyne, north of there, they're your Geordies. Also, in the pockets of the mining belt in mid-Durham and northwest Durham, you know, for all there's this huge conurbation that separates the Northumbrian miners and the Durham miners, the two communities are very alike. But the people who live in the middle...
That's on Tyneside.
On Tyneside. They're different. It's very tribal, the North East, very tribal. And then again, once you get into Northumberland itself, again, if I can call that my Geordie land, even that can be subdivided into various communities. In North East Northumberland, the Pitt District, the people there have their own way of life. You get a little bit further north of that when the pits run out and fishing begins to pick up. They're a different community again, with their own peculiar accent and dialect. West of that, if you go a little bit further inland, the fishing, there's no fishing, no sea fishing. The mines run out again because you're getting into the Cheviot foothills, and they're farmers and farm labourers and traditional craftsmen. They're different again. And north of that lot, you're away up almost to the border country. That accent could be mistaken for Scots in many respects.
What Geordie and Bob Johnson both lay in the same bed in a little port and who starts to the shore. But the power that been a nervous beat, my kick from Geordie's foot made Bob waking up the wrong instead of small.
keep your feet still, Jody Hinny. Let's be happy through the neat, 'cause we may not be so happy through the day. Oh, give that bit of comfort, keep your feet still, Jody lad, and Devon, drive me bonny dreams away. Now I dreamt there was a dance in hell, and Mary Clark was there, and I thought we tripped it lightly round the floor. As I pressed a heave and breathed a mind while waltzing round the room, it was more than I'd all ever day before. Keep your feet still, Jody Hinny, let's be happy through the night, 'cause we may not be so happy through the day. Is that bit of comfort, keep your feet still, Jody lad, and even drive me funny dreams away.
Northumbrians generally have little regard for people from other parts of the country, particularly if they come from the great urban areas. A Northumbrian would have little regard for somebody from Tyneside, for example, which could only be about, say, 15 or 20 miles away from his town or village. We have market towns and villages out here. We don't have any great sprawling towns. People who tend to live in the big conurbations are a lot, they have a sharper, more abrasive, less friendly character. Therefore, your Northumbrian tends to mistrust them. I don't know how justified that is, but I think generally people, toonies as we call them up here, are the old people, the old folks, the old pitmen, the old fishermen look upon your toonie who'll drive up here on a Sunday as some sort of a spiv. They wouldn't cheat him, they wouldn't be any less friendly to him, but they would be a little wary.
We have a case history in a small village. Case history, that sounds very pedantic, but we have a case of a local a village near where I live, of a pit there, where this man was 3 days underground, and he was trapped. Water was rising until, in fact, all he had was the width from the roof to just under his upper lip. In other words, he's 3 days, he finished up bending his head towards the roof to breathe. Now, that's 3 days, and that's a terrifying proposition. But when the man came out, the only thing he could say, if I was going to be rescued, I was going to be rescued. In other words, he knew full well that no effort was going to be spared to retrieve him from that situation. And in fact, that was so. No effort was spared, and he lived.
In Lochengi there stands a pit, the wheel above that is nae turning. For on a grey September morn, the fires o' hell below were burning. Though in below the coal lay rich, it's richer now for all that burning. For 47 brave men are dead, to wives and sweethearts ne'er returning. The seams are thick in Lochengi, the coal below is black and glistening, but the cost of coal is far or dear, for human lives there is nae reckoning. For coal is black and coal is red, and coal is rich beyond the treasure. It's black wi' wark and red wi' blood, its richness new in lives we measure. Far better that we'd never wrought 1,000 years of work and graven. The coal is black like the morning shroud, the women left behind their weaving. In Lochengi there stands a pit, the wheel above it is nae turning. For on a grey September morn, the fires o' hell below were burning.
Conditions have improved about 3,000%. The bad old days, you know, have gone, but that doesn't mean to say that it's still a pleasant existence having to go down a pit to make your living, to have to work all manner of shifts and all weathers to get to your colliery. When you get down there, you're 6 miles under the sea in these coastal collieries we've got now. The sea comes in, that's it, you've had it. People have been dying from up here for years, and the mines has stone dust disease, coal dust disease, damp, gas, all manner of things that can befall a pitman just on his way in and out to the pit face before he picks up his, you know, pushes a button to start his machine. The machines themselves are monstrous affairs. It must be something like Dante's Inferno when you go down to a pit face these days. Massive things. Miners' wages have improved immensely. But as my father was saying the other day, how can you pay enough, how can you compensate a man for this? He wakes up at about 2 o'clock in the morning. He looks outside, it's pouring a rain, a real filthy night. He's got to get up, leave his house, get dressed, drive wherever he's got to drive to his pit, go to the pit head, put his old gear on, down the shaft, be driven 6 miles under the sea. When he gets there, he's up to his waist in water. There's muck and filth all over the shop, all over the place. And he's got to work his shift in those conditions. Come back again, go through the whole process and go home. Who can blame him if one night he gets up and he says, oh, I'm not going to go to work today. That's why there's absenteeism in the pit. The only way to get these men down there is to pay them a good wage. You wonder why they go. It's another aspect of the Northumbrian character. The lack of alternatives. You've got to go down the pit, or you've got to go to work on the farms, or at sea, or go down to Tyneside and work in the shipbuilding industry. There's not a great deal of alternative. They're bringing light industry into the place now, but it's hard to train up people to work in factories after they've been used, you know, with a life, a great tradition in the same industry. They're drifted away. I'm an example. I didn't go down the pit. Had I been my grandfather's son instead of my father's son, I wouldn't have had any option. I couldn't have said, I don't want to go down the pit. I would have had to go in there. So things are better in that respect. Still a hard life here. It's why people are still proud to be Geordies. That's why we sing about the place.
The bonny pit laddie, the canny pit laddie, the bonny pit laddie for me, oh. He sits on his cracket as black as his jacket and brings white siller to me, oh. He walks hard and he brings us all his money, oh. He takes us in his arms and calls me his hinny, oh. The bonny pit laddie, the canny pit laddie, the bonny pit laddie for me, oh. He sits on his hunkers and yaks at the bunkers and brings white siller to me, oh. He comes yem and he tells us all his troubles, oh. He's had a row with the gaffer about his lazy morrows, oh. The bonny pit laddie, the canny pit laddie, the bonny pit laddie for me, oh. He sits in his hole as black as the coal and brings white siller to me, oh. He comes yem and he brings us all his money, oh. He takes us in his arms and calls me his hinny, oh.
Thank you.
bonny pit laddie, the canny pit laddie, the bonny pit laddie for Mayo. He sits on his cracket as black as his jacket and brings white siller to Mayo.